How would you like to pedal your way to profits and master business success 1 mile at a time? Aaron Novinger will tell us how. He's a passionate advocate, devoted grandfather, and small business champion on a heartfelt mission for justice. Known affectionately as the guy who pedals for Ponzi victims, Aaron is preparing for an inspiring 2,000-mile bike journey from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, all the way to the steps of the US Capitol in Washington, D.C. And his urgent goal is to save IRS Form 4684, Section C, a vital tax relief provision that helps victims of devastating Ponzi schemes rebuild their lives. So, Aaron, tell us, how can entrepreneurs pedal their way to profits?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
When we're talking about business, right? And so, and we were talking earlier about the bike ride, but you have to understand, my heart belongs to business. And so I started my first business at age 13, my first seven-figure business at age 21, and my first eight-figure business at age 28. And so I've had over a dozen businesses that I started from an idea and turned into seven, eight-figure businesses. And the thing is business is not difficult at all if you have an understanding of a need and creating a product or service that meets the need. And but honestly, how you pedal to profits is the same way how you pedal on a 2,000-mile bike ride. You have to be persistent. And I'm telling you, the most important thing in business, and I've told everybody this, anybody that comes to me that for coaching, and I probably spend half my week just coaching our entrepreneurs, and they're like, you know, I've got this idea for a business, and I always tell them, my personal opinion is I wish that it would require the same amount of schooling and education as a doctor to be a business owner, because people do not understand how hard it is to do what we do. We are the hardest working people on the planet, especially mom and pop business owners. The I always call them the venti shops. Venti, most people think that means large from Starbucks. It does not. It means 20. Okay, so 1 to 20 employees, which is the mom and pop, they are the hardest working, the most underpaid, most underserviced. Nobody pays any attention to them. And all they do is get up every day to have the best coffee shop or sandwich shop or dry cleaner in town, and nobody gives assistance. And me being as a business owner, I spent half my time just coaching success principles. And that's what that is. It's like, you got an idea, okay. Do you have a good executive council, people that you can kind of lean on to kind of run ideas by them? And I always call it the Swiss cheese model. Like, you know, you got to have a good circle of trust of people that can shoot holes in whatever it is, because you want to minimize the amount of mistakes that you make in business. The whole key, the whole thing is minimize the amount of screw ups. Okay. And stay with something long enough, but it requires a level of focus and determination. And determination is the word. And I always tell everybody, like, if you have to understand the purpose, right, of resistance, right? The purpose of the wall is to weed out the weak. That's the purpose. When you start a business, and for that business, and your only goal is to make money, it will literally chew you up and spit you out, because that's the nature of it. It has to weed out those that just want to make money and those that are serious that want to make a change. And again, I'm not saying that every business has to be like that. What I'm saying is as a business owner, you've got to have a level of resilience and determination that defies the laws of physics. Does that make sense, Lily?
Yes. So what you're saying is you need to be incredibly resilient and be focused on making a big impact. Tell us what more entrepreneurs need to know to pedal their way to profits.
Well, I tell you, years ago, my adopted dad passed away in 2016, and I've been lucky enough to have three parents, my mom, my natural dad, and my adopted dad. And my adopted dad was my dad my whole life, raised me. He adopted me when I was 5 years old. And he passed in 2016 from lung cancer. And it was like the longest, shortest 6 month battle of cancer. And there's a beauty that comes from knowing that a family member is passing away, because you treat that time with that person different. It's just different. Okay. And so during that 6 month battle of dad going through chemo and fighting cancer, every 2 weeks I would drive, because he lived in central Missouri. So I would drive to Missouri for a long weekend to spend with dad. And on one of those trips, I started thinking about all the businesses that I've done in the past, and I've had some that didn't succeed. And I was trying to come up with a set of like rules or characteristics or standards that kind of separated the businesses that I had that killed it and then the ones that just puttered away. And through one of those road trips and me just spending 12 hours just thinking about all the businesses, I came up with my seven rules of business. And these seven rules of business that I have came specifically for my experience in business. But here's the thing. Now I use my seven rules as a litmus test. So anytime I've got an idea or an entrepreneur brings me an idea and they're like, so what do you think, Aaron? And I'm like, okay, well, let's see how it does against the seven rules of business. Okay. And the seven rules of business are, for me, very unique, but they're also, it's kind of like my North Star. Okay. So first of all, and wait, Lily, are you okay if I share the seven rules? Because it kind of ties into the question about how we can pedal our way to profits as business owners or entrepreneurs or whatever. Okay. So rule number one, it has to be a business I can start with less than $10,000. Okay. So that's very, very important to me, because I typically start like service-based businesses. Okay. And so I got to be able to start this thing organically. So meaning like, and Jeff Bezos actually said the same thing, where everything that they started Amazon starts as an acorn. So a huge oak tree starts as an acorn. And so when we're talking about business, the idea is start everything small organically and then grow it, right? So that's rule number one. I have to be able to start this idea with almost no money, meaning I have to be able to bootstrap this thing. You know, now I don't know, these rules that I'm giving you, Lily, for you and your listener and your audience are for mainly like service-based businesses, which to me seem to be like the easiest of all the businesses to start, because it's an idea. And most of the time you're selling air. Okay. So it's not like you're starting a manufacturing plant or you're going to be making iPhones. You need $100 million cash infusion. These seven rules are not for that type of business. Okay. So number one, we've got to start for less than 10,000. Number two, it has to be a business where you have high capacity team members. To do something great requires a great team. This is key, man. This will sink you faster than anything. And to be honest with you, Rebecca and I hire every single person at the company. So did Elon Musk. He hired the first 1,000 people at Tesla on purpose, because you're looking for a vibe. This is about culture. This is about a fit for the company. And this is stuff that you can't find on a resume. And so for me, we actually use Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg's rule for hiring team members. And Facebook has a rule, and that is they ask themselves this question: would I work for that person? If the answer is yes, you're dealing with a high capacity team member. That's rule number two. Okay. Three, it's a business that can easily scale to $10 million in revenue. Okay. Meaning I can grow the distribution channel really easy. Okay. Which ties directly into rule number four. It's a business that I can grow with direct advertising. Okay. So meaning, I can do direct mail. I can do postcards. I can do SEO. I can do Facebook ads. It has to be a business that I can put a certain amount of money to marketing and it generates an ROI. Okay. Like referrals are great, but they are not necessary for us to succeed. Okay. The next rule, number five, it has to be a business that allows me to work 5 hours a week if I want to. Meaning, I cannot be the one that sells. I can't. Meaning, you start that way. Right? Because in the beginning, the business owner literally has to wear all the hats. But if you're the one that is having to sell to generate the revenue, you're just an employee of your own business. You're not really a business owner. You're an employee of a business that happens to be owned by you. That's a big thing for me, okay? You know, I can't be the one responsible for the day-to-day. I just can't. Rule number six, and this is key. It has to be a unique product or service or a product or service marketed in a unique way. Meaning, if all the dogs are barking up this one tree, let's find the tree that there's not a lot of dogs barking up. I don't like being a bobblehead in an industry. Whatever I do, I have to be, for all intents and purposes, the top cancer doctor. Like I have to be the best in whatever that is, and I can't have any competition. There could be nobody like me in whatever it is that we're doing, okay? It has to be a unique product or service or a product or service marketed in a unique way. And number seven, it has to be a business that follows the parent rule. And for me, the parent rule is this a product or service I would allow my parents to buy or invest in? That's key. Because character and integrity and wearing the white hat are huge for me. And we were talking before in the green room that I was in ministry for 10 years and I pastored for 7 of those 10 years. And you work really, really, really hard to have a great name and reputation. And the worst thing you could do is be a part of something that is kind of shady, a little shady. You see what I'm saying? And that's why for me, rule number 7, even though it's the 7th rule, it's probably should be rule number 1, because you can't have any of the other rules if this is a product or service that you wouldn't allow your parents to buy or invest in. You see what I'm saying? It happens to be my rule 7, but actually it probably should be rule number 1, because you wouldn't start this business with less than 10,000. You wouldn't have high capacity team members. You see what I'm saying? If this is a product or service that you wouldn't allow your parents to buy or invest in, the other 6 rules don't matter. Make sense? So that's kind of how our entrepreneurs and your listeners and audience can pedal their way to profits. This happens to be like the lighthouse that has guided me for years and years and years to kind of keep me on a straight and narrow path. Oh, you're on mute. You're on mute.
Tell us about the role of faith in pedaling your way to profits.
Come on, girl. Okay. So faith is a kind of a unique thing, man. First of all, I'm not religious, but I'm a Jesus freak. Okay. That dude changed my life. But I got no place in church. Okay. And so for me, faith has always been the belief in something bigger than myself, but I have watched God. And when I say God, I'm not talking about a certain religion. I'm talking about a creator, a provider, capital P, capital C. That especially when I get these, I don't know, like ordained visions, if you will, I have watched my provider show up so many times supernaturally. Because we were talking about this in the green room. Most people think, because you hear about miracles and then they read about how Jesus turned water into wine or somebody parted the Red Sea, whatever. Okay. That's like 0.1% of the miracles. 99.99% of the miracles are miracles of provision. I call them God's MOPs, M-O-P, miracles of provision. When Jesus sent the disciples out, he told them, take nothing, nothing. You're going to watch my dad provide everything, and you're going to see the miracles of provision every minute of every day. We as a population and society, especially us being an industrialized nations, we don't really rely on anything for miracle provision. We just don't. Okay. We have money, we have a job, and we buy our own miracles of provision. So most of us never put ourselves in a position to see the miracle. But when you do, it changes you, because you see things that happen that could not have happened unless the architect of the universe was trying to make this thing happen for you. And when you see it over and over and over and over and over and over again, you realize, okay, we're not alone. There's a higher power here. But I think ultimately for me, it's those miracles of provision. I always call them trail markers. And so like, if you've ever been hiking, I'm sure you've been hiking. Okay. You look very fit. Okay. So when you go out and hike, right? And if you've been on like gnarly trails, like where sometimes the trails disappear. Okay. And you feel like you're lost. You look around and you're looking for ribbons tied on trees. Those are trail markers telling you you're on the right path. Keep moving forward. And so you'll see, trust me, I don't know why, the older I get, I cry like a baby. Okay, I was never like this, but I get so emotional when I talk about this stuff, because When it changes your life, and you've seen this happen so many times, it's very overwhelming to see the provision provided the way it has been. Talking about the bike ride, and we're talking about that in the green room, you know, how that whole thing came to be. And it was like, you can't dream up how the miracles of provision happen. And that's the cool thing about faith and doing difficult things, because people don't realize that all of us walk through life wearing either a red lens or a blue lens. Okay. So like you, again, you look so young, but I grew up in the 80s. Okay. So in the 1980s, we had 3D glasses. You've seen these. Okay. So they're like white and they have like a red lens and a blue lens. Okay. So this is how life treats us. Most people put on the red lens, and that's the filter they see the world, which is everything going wrong in the world. And by the way, it's true. So it's not like they're sociopaths or psychopaths. Like, they're not making it up. This stuff is true. It's real. But at the same time, there's a blue lens, and it's the blue lens of gratitude and kindness. And when that is the lens that you look at the world, it shows you every day the miracles of provision. But you got to put on that lens, because it's there, but most people are wearing the red lens and they can't see it. Even though it's right there, they can't see it. And so much of success in business or in life is having the concept of gratitude and kindness and looking for the miracle, looking for the what you see through the blue lens. Does that make sense? So yes. that kind of ties in how faith and all that works in.
Yes. Tell us more about, for someone who, let's say, is looking for a traditional way to profits, how would they start activating faith in order to pedal their way to profits faster, yeah, so they can see this kind of like magic happening in their lives and to feel basically like helped by the universe or the creator, the provider, in the same way that you have been helped in your bike ride for the Ponzi victims?
I feel like let's say somebody's got an idea, okay? And the first thing you typically have to do, and this is what I always say when it comes to business, because most of the time we get overwhelmed with everything we have to do, okay? So, you know, when you're starting a business, you have to be very compartmentalized. And the nature is to want to know everything about the business, but that's humanly impossible. Okay. So I would say God works where he like swings the door open, you know, like 1 inch at a time. So he doesn't give you the full vision, not in the beginning. And most of the time, if we saw really what it's supposed to be, like you'd be like, nope, I'm going to turn tail and go the other way. No, thank you. Right. So you like when you're in the hotel room and it's got that little latch on the door and you can see like that much in the room, that's how the vision starts. And the biggest issue that I see working with them, they tend to deal with paralysis by analysis, okay? So they see everything, they have to analyze everything, and then they're weighing the pros and the cons, and they talk themselves out of whatever their heart project is because they're afraid of being uncomfortable. And I'll tell you, in 2011, 11 years ago, so this would have been 2014, there's a really famous TED Talk by a guy named Joel Runyon. And he did a TED Talk on the power of taking cold showers. Okay. And so he was talking specifically about how he was having a conversation with a friend of his having lunch. And he was talking about this business idea that he has. And he's like, but, you know, he just started listing all the excuses. I don't have the time. I don't have the money. I don't even know how to do this, blah, blah. And his friend said, right, but why haven't you started the business? He goes, have you not been listening? I just told you. And because of this, he goes, those are not the reasons. You haven't started this because you are not comfortable being uncomfortable. And he said, I want you to go take cold showers for the next 30 days, 30-day cold water, cold shower challenge. And he said, you will see that the same excuses that you give yourself to not turn on the cold water, it's the same excuses you give yourself to not start a business or do anything that you want to do. They're the same excuses. And he said, go do the cold. And he said, come back and tell me. And he goes, you'll start your business. And when I saw that was 10 years ago. I said, you know what? I'm going to do the cold water challenge. I haven't touched hot water in 10 years. I will not touch hot water ever. It's a treat to me. The only time I get in hot water is if it's a hot tub. That's it. You know, I am so calloused to doing difficult things. It started facing that faucet. And trust me, Lily, you're going to do this now. I already know you. Okay. So you're gonna be like, I'm going to try. I'm going to do this. And you'll see the first time you got that hand on the faucet and you're like, okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1, turn. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1, turn. Okay. You will literally stand there for 5 minutes trying to convince yourself to do it. And then you'll see. And what happens is, it's a little bit, I'm sure you've heard of that concept of eat the frog first thing in the morning, right? And the idea is, if you start getting comfortable doing things that you do not want to do, and for me, I hate cold water. I hate it, okay? I hate being cold. But what something powerful happens after a couple weeks of doing it is that the next time you've got this project or something, and it's like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. You're like, yeah, but I just took a cold shower this morning. Like, if I can do that, I can do this. I'm not kidding. It's just like that. And then you start building up this calloused muscle of, I know this is going to sound weird, I enjoy being uncomfortable. I prefer it. I do not like comfort, right? But I'm telling you, to be a business owner, are you kidding? Everything is about being uncomfortable. Everything. The world will war against you to keep you from succeeding. It's the nature of it, right? Resistance is designed to weed out the weak. That's the purpose of it, right? So I kind of feel like for me, it's been a journey. You know, I mean, I had crazy ADD. I got the lowest SAT score of anybody in my entire senior class. The only award that I had when I graduated high school was class clown. That was it. I was just funny. Okay. I just like making people laugh. But I found out I really loved business. And remember how I told you, like, I started my first business when I was 13, but that was because my grandmother, like, they were in town. And remember, I told you, we were poor growing up. Both parents in the military, we weren't poor. We were po', okay? We couldn't even afford the last two letters of that word, okay? And so I was 13. We had no money. And at the time, my parents' deal was like, look, you get a little bit of stuff for your birthday, a little bit for Christmas, and you get $100 a year for beginning of school clothes, like first part of school for the clothes. That's it. So they said, if you want other money and stuff, you got to go do it yourself. So I was literally... And you're going to laugh at this story, okay? So I'm sitting at the table with my grandparents. They were in town. My grandparents were in town. And my grandparents are my heroes. And my grandmother, I'm having this conversation. And I said, Grammy, I said, I want to start a business. What should I do? And she's like, well, let's think of some stuff. I said, okay. And she said, well, how about you mow yards? And I said, I would love to, but I'm deathly allergic to grass. Can't do that. Okay. How about, and she suggested I go pick up dog poo, like from the neighbor's yard. I'm like, okay, that's disgusting. No. Now, by the way, Lily, you know that that's a huge business right now, okay? But I was like, I'm not touching dog poo. That's crazy. Now, the night before, she happened to make her like famous like family secret Hawaiian roll recipe. She made Hawaiian rolls, okay? And I said, Grams, would you mind if I made and sold your bread? And she goes, no, that'd be awesome. And so, Lily, I am not kidding. That summer, I made so much damn bread. I'm telling you, my parents would literally go to work and they were just getting orders for like loaves of Italian, loaves of wheat, loaves of white, Hawaiian rolls, wheat rolls. And I swear, Lily, this is not kidding. I was 13 years old in my house, spent every single minute during the summer in front of my TV, okay, kneading all day, kneading bread, kneading rolls, watching all of the soap operas, all the game shows, you know, all the Judge Judy shows. I just sit there and watch TV all day while I was making bread. But that was my very first business. And what did I tell you? I was like, look, when we're talking about business, you have to be able to see a need, and then you have to figure out how to quantify that. And we were talking about not getting overwhelmed at everything. most individuals then try to map out the entire business from A to Z. And that's the problem. You cannot worry about A to Z, but you have to obsess over A to E. The first few steps, and it's the first few steps to cash flow. And I always tell people, when you're building a business from the ground up, it's a little bit like pushing a hunk of metal off the cliff and build the airplane as it's falling. You have to be comfortable not knowing what's going to happen beyond this point. And you have to trust the process and trust the creator and provider. Does that make sense?
Yes. You're doing this this bike ride for Ponzi victims. And I'm wondering, is there any connection between becoming a successful business owner and putting some of your effort towards an impactful cause like that, so that that would become like a catalyst for your business to become more successful?
Without question. I have a philosophy in business. I've been super blessed where I have not worked for money in probably 15 years, probably. And so when I say that, it's not because I'm like independently wealthy. It's because for the last 15-ish years, everything that I do, it's from response of a burden that I have to take care of something. It's a burden. So like if you ever listen to Elon Musk, and I remember one time, this is years ago, and somebody interviewed him, where do you get the motivation? And he goes, what motivation? We're trying to create sustainable energy. We have to figure out interplanetary like living, because it's not if, it's when a comet comes. And by the time you see the comet, it's too late. We've got to figure out how to have sustainable energy, all this stuff, the boring, whatever it is, okay? And for me, that's how I've always done it, where it's a burden. And so like with what we do for the accounting, our accounting business, every day, even though we work at a for-profit business, we all feel like we work at a nonprofit. Every minute of every day, all we want to do is help our business owners suffer less. The secret for me, Lily, is, and if it's okay, I want to tell you one tiny story about ministry. And I think it's going to tie into business and purpose and burden and everything. So I told you before, I was in ministry for 10 years and I pastored for 7 of those 10 years. In 2006, my mentor, Lewis, actually is the one that called me into ministry, okay? And so Lewis basically, and I was calling my Jesus, like Latino Jesus. He's like Hispanic dude, and he's just so freaking wise, and he like speaks in parables and crap. So Lewis, I get in ministry in 2006. And mind you, Lewis called me into ministry. Mind you, I'm running my 8-figure company. I'm in my 20s, okay? I've got like 100 employees, you know? And Lewis is like, dude, you got a call in your life. You need to be in ministry. I'm like, you got the wrong dude, bro. I'm a dirty dude, man. That ain't me. And he goes, are you stupid? He's like, if everybody was like clean, there'd be nobody in ministry. Everybody's flawed, right? And he goes, you're doing 8 figures. You're in your 20s. You could do this with your eyes closed. And I made a decision at that point, Lily, that I never looked back on. And from that moment forward, I decided I would trust what Lewis saw in me more than what I saw in myself. From that moment forward, I trusted what he saw. And so after about 3 years of being in ministry, I really loved it. And so I took Lewis to lunch and I said, Louis, I said, man, I really love this ministry stuff. I said, I want to do more of the ministry stuff and less of running the practice. And he said, you know, when I got in ministry years ago, I was struggling with the same thing. And by the way, Lewis is bivocational then and still today. He's pastoring a church in California, like in the Fresno area, and he's a registered nurse. Still is. So he's bivocational, and he has been his whole ministry career. And so Lewis said, when I first got in ministry years ago, I was struggling with the same thing. And he said, my mentor gave me the best definition of ministry I've ever heard. He said, don't think of ministry as in what you do on the weekend. He said, first of all, Jesus did no ministering in the church, none. He was always out with the people. He said, but think of ministry in its purest form as simply helping people suffer less, helping people suffer less. And Louis said, what I realized is when my mentor told me that what he does in the hospital was more ministry than what he's doing on the weekend. And what we realized is what we do in the practice is more ministry than what I was doing on the weekend. Our job is to help our clients suffer less. They got the weight of the world on their shoulders. I want to take those two elephants on their shoulders or weighing them down and put those elephants in the sauna, you know, let those suckers lose some weight for them, you know. And going back to the burden, everything that I do always comes back to helping people suffer less. Always. Everything. And I'm telling you, man, and it was actually Jeff Bezos that said this. And when he said it, it was so profound to me. He said, most people have a job, you know, and actually most people like their job. Okay. He said, but fewer still have a career, something that kind of aligns with their gifts and talents and, you know, that they really, they do well. He said, but fewer still have a calling. And he goes, when you're able to do your calling, when you go from career to calling, that's the sweet spot. And it's true. You will work 12 hours a day and it will not feel like work because it's your calling. And so if we're talking to our entrepreneurs, I literally ask them this one question, and it's a scenario, okay? And this right here, your audience from this one scenario you and I are going to walk through, they will literally be able to know exactly what their calling is from this one scenario I'm about to give you. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay. So, Lily, let's say, and mind you, okay, let's just say we're having a conversation. And so I say, Lily, I want you to imagine that you got a random phone call today from a gentleman named John, okay? And when you looked at the caller ID on your phone, it said John Smith, but Esquire, ESQ. And so you know that's an attorney, and you're like, well, I don't have any collection, so I'm going to answer the phone. So you answer the phone. And this person says, hey, my name's John. Is this Lily? Yes, this is Lily. Lily, you don't know who I am, but I'm actually your grandfather's estate attorney. And you know that your grandfather recently passed away, and you know that your grandfather was unbelievably wealthy. Lily, today is the best day of your life because your grandfather watched you his whole life. Now, you know that you were estranged from your grandfather. You guys didn't really communicate. But you know, Lily, that you're the only person in the entire family that did not go to your grandfather to get money from him, to try to take advantage of him. And your grandfather saw that in you. And your grandfather saw that you started working in an early age. And you know, Lily, that he made all of his money in business. And so your grandfather wrote you into the trust. And just so you know, Lily, today, you are generationally wealthy. Today, from the first of every month until you take your last breath, you will have $50,000 deposited the first of the month for the rest of your life. Your grandfather knows that you're frugal, you know, and so your grandfather knows that you'll use a little bit of it and you'll save the rest of it. But here's the stipulation of the trust. You must work. But your grandfather doesn't care what you do. You can volunteer. You can start a business. You can volunteer. You can do whatever you want. But to get that $50,000 deposited, you got to do something the majority of the day. What does Lily do?
Is that a question?
That's a question. What do you do? You don't have to work, but you have to work, but you don't need to work for money. You just get to work and do whatever you want to do. What does Lily do?
The same stuff.
Yes. I mean, right? That question will tell you what your purpose is. Okay. And so your listeners are trying to figure out, what the hell am I supposed to do? Ask the question. Do the scenario. And the answer, and I always say this, do not think about your answer. Don't think. I need the first thing that comes to your mind, and that's the first thing you have to say. Because this scenario is designed to bypass the conscious and go to subconscious. This is tapping subconscious stuff. Okay. So when you get there and somebody says, honestly, I love working with old people. Nailed it. There it is. That is the calling. That is what you're going to be doing. Not necessarily today, working toward it. Because right now you might be flipping burgers at McDonald's. Okay. But I'm telling you right now, the creator of the universe, as soon as you decided, you know what? That's what I'm doing. And this is key. Remember I was talking about determination and persistence? You have to understand there's a difference between wanting and deciding. There's a huge difference between wanting and deciding. We all want to be rich. We want to win the lottery. Men want a six-pack. Women want to be super hot. We all want crap, okay? But once you've decided, I'm going to have it, that's when the creator starts moving things supernaturally to bring it to you. Think of it like, you know, we operate in the third dimension right now, and I did a YouTube video on how to manifest because I've seen this 1,000 times in my life. And so just imagine that you have an imaginary conveyor belt floating like in front of, right here in front of your head, okay? And now you're like, I want this, and it puts it on the conveyor belt, but this conveyor belt is moving. It's moving constantly, okay? And the only way to hit the stop button on the conveyor belt is you have to make a decision. You've decided something. So when you're like, I want to be rich, I want to do that. Once you've decided, meaning come hell or high water, this is going to happen. And I always say, I use a phrase, I call it D or C. This is going to happen unless I'm dead or in a coma. That's the only way that this thing's not going to happen. Once you've decided, then watch what happens. And then you wear the blue lens of kindness and gratitude, and you're looking for the miracles of provision. Watch. It doesn't even make sense. It's literally the most fun and adventure you've ever had in your whole life, watching the whole world move to bring you what you've decided you're going to do. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's great. Tell us where entrepreneurs can find you.
You can find me on, the big bike ride website, PonziaRelief.org. Please, please, please go sign the petition. We're trying to save Form 4684. You'll see on the website is a letter to President Trump. We just want this to be an executive action where we can save this because it's helping way too many people recover money from these crimes, and that's actually expiring the end of this year. So this is a big thing for me, but you can also find me on YouTube, Aaron Novinger, the Venti Business Guy. I just teach business owners, you know, principles and stuff that to help them, you know, succeed. And then probably on X for Aaron Novinger. That's probably the best ways to find me. And but it's just, look, if you can't tell, I just love helping people, man. I just love it. And I just am so appreciative for you to kind of give me the platform to be able to share this, because I feel like, you know, I don't know, maybe there's some people that need to hear something that we're saying here, right?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.